and welcome to the screencast. My name is Chris Bowen, and I'm a developer evangelist with Microsoft, covering the northeastern United States. I can be reached at cbowen@microsoft.com and through my blog at blogs.msdn.com/cbowen. This session, Exploring Internet Explorer 8, is based on the content that I delivered as part of our Northeast MSDN Roadshow series in the fall of 2008. Now, I'm recording this in April 2009, so everything you're seeing is updated for the final release version of Internet Explorer 8 that's available today. I'm going to cover a number of different areas in this screencast. We'll begin by taking a look at the consumer-oriented features in Internet Explorer 8, and I'll point out a few things that you as a web developer may consider implementing on your own websites to take advantage of new functionality in Internet Explorer 8. Next, we'll take a look at changes for standards and options for compatibility in IE 8. And third, we'll actually spend a fair amount of time diving into the new developer features that are offered as part of IE 8, in particular, the developer tools that are embedded inside installations of Internet Explorer 8. And we'll wrap up by pointing out a few places you can go for more information and some checklists and resources for developing with Internet Explorer 8. So let's begin by taking a look at some of the consumer features that are part of Internet Explorer 8. And really, the best way to do this is through demo. So I'm going to leave the slides behind. We'll bring up Internet Explorer 8, and I'm going to show you some of these features in action. So here's IE 8, and I'm going to show you the first feature is part of the address bar functionality. I'm going to type in the word blog, and you'll see immediately a whole list of options appears for me, the first of which is a link actually to my blog. That's because Internet Explorer knows that when I typed in the word blog, I've usually gone to my blog as a result. And so with Shift plus Enter, I can immediately go to my most common result for the thing that I've just typed in. The next section is a list of the recent URLs that I've gone to that have the word blog either in the URL and or in the actual title for the page itself. So you can see a number of these links to my blog as well. If you click the arrow next to that section, you can see an expanded history of links that include the word blog in them. The next section is related to favorites, the bookmarks that we may have stored within Internet Explorer. This is a nice way to search through them automatically. And you can see here that it's found a number of my bookmarks and my favorites that I've stored that have the word blog either in the actual description or in the URL itself. And so I can quickly navigate through what for many of us I'm sure is hundreds of different bookmarks and favorites that we have to quickly find what we're looking for without having to manually navigate through different directories and hierarchies of folders of bookmarks. And the last thing to point out is if you click on this down arrow at the very bottom, there's some other ways of turning what you've typed into a destination. And so I can either hit enter and go directly to a URL of just blog, which could make sense if I'm on an intranet site. I can also hit Control plus Enter, and that's going to automatically prepend and append the www and .com aspect of a URL, and then navigate automatically to that. And then the last two, I can open up whatever I've typed in a new tab or in a background tab with Alt Enter and Alt Shift Enter. So the next thing to talk about is on the right-hand side, we can see there's a box with the words Live Search in it. This is actually a way to search through a variety of search providers to find information on the web. If I type in a search phrase, let's say Xbox 360, the live search provider returns suggestions using that key phrase of Xbox 360, and I could pick any one of these items, and it would bring me right over to live.com with that phrase already supplied. I also have the history of places I've gone to with the Xbox keywords in it, and at the very bottom, you can see that there's a number of other icons from different providers that I've installed. So for example, if I click on the Amazon Visual Search, this provider will spring into action and will take that Xbox 360 phrase, go out to Amazon, and pull back a number of items from their catalog, including pictures and the prices associated with those items. I can click on it and go right to Amazon.com for more information. eBay and Wikipedia also have plugins. You can go to find more by clicking this down arrow and going to Find More Providers. This will bring you to the add-ons gallery where you can go through a wide variety of different search providers. Just click on them, say Add to Internet Explorer, and it will bring them right into that search box and you can use them going forward. There's a wide variety of different things to choose from, again, through that down arrow or just by going to ieaddons.com. Next, let's take a look at how IE8 handles tabs as you're browsing through various pages. From the gallery, I'm going to open a couple of random links. Let's open these in new tabs. The Amazon one, let's open in a tab as well. And then I'll open a brand new tab, and let's go to msdn.com and open a link from here. And let's open this one. Looks great. And then I'll open a brand new session to, let's go to msdn/IE. We're going to research some new things in Internet Explorer. Let's take a look at, let's take a look at this link, open in a new tab. And what I wanted to point out is that the tabs that we've opened have been color-coded according to the root document that we navigated from. And so the first three that I opened, the first one is the search provider's gallery, but then I opened two more from that initial root page. It's colored those green for me to show that there's some relationship in terms of how I navigated through these various pages. Same thing is true with the msdn.com and then msdn/IE sites. And what this is useful for is to track research that you're doing. If you're looking up a certain term or some researching some article, you can open these all up from the same page or from related pages, and Internet Explorer will group them together for you. And what's nice about that is when you're done researching, or you need to switch quickly between them, you can see really what you've done. You can say, all right, here's my research for MSDN, here's my IE-related research, and then here was some research based on search providers. If you're done at some point, you can easily close that entire group. So we'll say close that tab group, and let's close this one as well, leaving me only with the one tab group that I haven't closed yet. So it's a nice way to be able to navigate a variety of resources and have Internet Explorer manage them for you. And the next thing to point out is something that happens all the time for me. So if you close a tab or something and you say, oh, I didn't mean to close that, I need that back. You can actually click on New Tab, and what it will do is offer you a chance to reopen your closed tabs. So you can see here is a list of all the tabs that I've closed in my current browsing session. So I can immediately bring those back up. In fact, here's the one that I just closed. And so we're immediately back to where we were. So really we haven't lost anything. And so if you need to go back in time to something you've already closed, you can easily do that with Internet Explorer. Also on the new tab is the option to browse with the in private mode. This is basically a way to open Internet Explorer in a way that when you close it again, it will basically erase all of the history associated with that browsing session. So anything in terms of the address bar or any cookies that have been set by the site will be erased as soon as you close that browser session. Now, one more thing to point out about tabs is the fact that IE8 actually treats tabs differently than it did in prior versions. With IE8, a tab can run with its own isolated process. And so each of the tabs that you have open within a single Internet Explorer window will themselves each have a process to isolate themselves from the other pages that you're opening. And what that means is that if you're accessing a website or a web page that has some issue that would ordinarily crash it, maybe some problematic plugin that it's accessing causing a memory issue, instead of crashing everything that you're looking at you know, that current time, it will crash that particular tab in isolation of the others. And in fact, IE8 will do its best to recover that tab back to where you were at that current time. So it's a nice way to be resilient against failures as you're browsing to different sites. The next feature we'll talk about is something called web slices. This is something that you as a web developer can elect to enable for those people coming to your site using Internet Explorer 8. And it's best understood through a demonstration, so I'm going to go ahead and bring up live.com. And let's do a search for the Boston weather. So weather in Boston, Mass. And what this will do is bring back, of course, the list of links that satisfy that. But at the very top, we're seeing a quick, at-a-glance view of the forecast for the Boston area. When I hover over that with my cursor, you can see it's surrounded by a slight green border there. And on the left-hand side, there's a button as well. Now, the idea behind web slices is that there may be information on a web page that you would like to get updated details about over time without having to continually return to a site just to see if it's changed or not. And in this case, we'd like to know when the weather has been updated for the Boston area, so we can go ahead and subscribe to this web slice by clicking the green button. And it's going to say, do you want to add this to your favorites bar? Sure. So let's go ahead and say add. And what it now does is it has put that up on our favorites bar. And if you'll notice, the text behind that favorite is bold. That's telling us that there's information there that we haven't looked at just yet. So if I click on the link, you'll see that it's going to expand out and show us the weather in Boston, Mass. And when I close that again, it's going to be back to normal text at that point. Now the idea is, later on I can be browsing away and hours later the forecast could change. The nice thing about Web Slice is that Internet Explorer will recognize that based on a polling interval that you can configure, but there is a default one built in. And it will basically ask the site if that information has changed since the last time it was requested. And it will, if it has changed, it will update that link on the favorites bar. It will make it flash very briefly, and then it will show it in bold again, just to remind you that there is something that you could look at, that content has changed since the last time you viewed it. So it's actually fairly straightforward to add this to your site. There's some great documentation I'll have links to at the end for how to wire up your own really HTML, XML wrappers for the content on your site to enable this feature. And I will also show this in action over on eBay. So let's go ahead and bring up ebay.com. And let's just type in a search. Let's go back to our friend the Xbox 360. And we'll let it run. They've actually incorporated this functionality into their site as well. And so if you go down, you see the results, of course. And as you hover over the various ones, you can see it's a little bit harder, but you can see there's the green border on this one, and then also the button at the left-hand side that you can click on to subscribe. So we can go ahead and do that. I'm going to click on that. I didn't mean to hover over the image there. But I'm going to add that to my favorites bar. And at the very top, you can see that we've got the link out to the eBay site as well. And so this will tell us over time if the price has changed, if someone's outbid us, or if it's any information we want to track about that particular auction. We can see that at a glance and have the favorites bar give us an indication that there's something to look at since the last time we browsed that particular item. And again, this feature is actually fairly straightforward to add. There's plenty of resources and information for how to add this to your own sites as well. Okay, I've gone ahead and switched to another website, MicrosoftCambridge.com, to help demonstrate the features of accelerators in IE8. If we go to the bottom of this page, we'll find the address for the facility. I'm going to go ahead and select it. And when I do that, a blue button will appear indicating that we've selected text, and we may wish to feed that through an accelerator. I'll go ahead and click the button. We see there's a variety of ones to choose from. I'll choose, because I chose an address, I'll choose the map with live search option. And I am just hovering over that option right now. And you'll see that it's actually sent the text across the wire to the live search map site and brought back a pop-up window of a map of just that address. And what's great about this accelerator, and really all accelerators, is that it lets you work with functionality external to the current site without having to leave the site that you're on. So I'm still within the same context of this Microsoft Cambridge site. I'm looking at the address and the map of the facility, but I haven't had to navigate anywhere else to find that. There's other accelerators as well, and so you can see the list here. Let me show you one in action. I'll select some text over here on the right, on the left-hand side. And by the way, you can click this button or you can just right-click on the text. And I'll say translate with live search. Now, this isn't Arabic, so it hasn't done any translation for me. So I'm going to go ahead and change the language. And we'll say English to French. And once I do that, it takes all the highlighted text, feeds it through the accelerator with my defined option, calls out to the Microsoft Translator service, and brings back the result in that pop-up window, again, without having to navigate away. So I have my translated text for whatever purpose I need it. And I can copy and paste that within the current page. And you can also click on these links as well to go directly to that site, and it will open up the full page in another tab. But the power here, again, is the fact that I don't have to do that. I can maintain the context of the current page. To find more accelerators, these are, again, just the ones that are by default installed with IE. You can click on this All Accelerators. You'll see I've installed a few others as well. You can manage them. You can define the order in which they appear and what menus they appear on. You can also go ahead and say find more accelerators. So let's do that. This will bring us to the add-ons gallery that we saw before for the live search providers. And in this case, we have options for accelerators. And I can bring in other ones as well. You can see there's a variety of these as well. You simply just say add to Internet Explorer, and then you can have the option to feed any text that you select into a variety of services that are associated with these particular accelerators. Now, I'll point out to conclude on accelerators that you can also, as a web developer, write your own. Just like you can with the live with the providers for the search bar, you can write your own providers for accelerators. And it's not that difficult to do. There's plenty of documentation on how to write these things. And you can basically expose them to your own consumers to give an additional set of stickiness to the services that you offer on your website. So I'll conclude the look at the consumer features of IE8, first by mentioning that ViewSource has some minor features in the default viewer that you can look at. But it also gives you the opportunity to specify a separate application to use as your ViewSource application. So if you have a favorite editor that you prefer to use, you can go ahead and configure that if you'd like. Also, zooming has been improved within IE8, so if you are trying to magnify the contents of a page, they've added further intelligence to handle the text and the images on the page. So you can actually, on the bottom right side here, you can see the zoom location plus some predefined zoom levels. If I click, say, 150, it will zoom the page into that level, and it's doing a bit more intelligence around how it flows the document, and the result is that it actually reduces the amount of horizontal scrolling that's introduced as you increase the size of the page. So it just makes a nice way to magnify sites that you're visiting with a simple zoom feature. In this segment, we'll focus in on standards compliance and the various options that we have for maintaining compatibility with multiple versions of Internet Explorer that may be used to access our websites. Internet Explorer 8, by default, uses standards mode to visualize pages. And what this means is that we as web developers need to be aware that there may be changes that have been made in Internet Explorer 8 that will not work as we intend with code that we have written for prior versions of Internet Explorer. So we need to go through our sites and make sure that these changes, adoptions of new standards, changes to prior behavior, do not have some negative effects for our websites. Now we have a number of ways of indicating our intent in terms of compatibility and standards modes within our websites, and I'll go through each of these in turn. Now the first of these options is actually the least desirable, because you're relying on the users of your website to get things right. Basically, compatibility view is used when a user comes to a website that hasn't otherwise been marked as ready for Internet Explorer 8. The site will render in IE8 standards mode by default, but if there's a problem, the user has to understand, first of all, that there is a problem. Second of all, they have to resist the urge to leave the site because it's broken. And finally, they have to understand that IE8 offers this option to them and that it might be related to the fact that your website's not quite ready for IE8 and may have a problem with compatibility, that they would then press this compatibility button, putting the website into compatibility view and making all subsequent requests to web pages on your site being rendered in compatibility view. This is obviously not the best way to handle things, because you don't want to rely on every single user of your site, first of all, experiencing a subpar experience because there might be a problem, but also to have the knowledge to address it by pressing that button. The next option is a little bit better, but it's still not the preferred approach. It's relying on what's called the compatibility view list. And this only affects sites that are major sites. They will be added to this particular list that is maintained at Microsoft, where compatibility problems have been reported to Microsoft. And again, it's only for top websites, so if you're on a smaller site, this may not even apply to you as an option. Sites on this list will automatically render in compatibility view when viewed through IE8. And so this is nice because the consumer doesn't need to know about the compatibility button, nor do they have to see a potential problem caused by IE8, the standards mode. But it's still not the best because, first of all, it's something that's set at the top level of your domain. And what that means is if you have subdomains and maybe only one application has a problem with it, it's going to affect every single application on your top level of domain. It's also not good because Compatibility View doesn't let you access the highest level of standard support and features that IE8 offers. So you'll want to do one of the following things to address this and to avoid being on this list altogether. Now, if you look at the picture at the bottom there, the second checkbox says Display Intranet Sites in Compatibility View. This was in response to some customer requests, basically saying that if a website is viewed, an intranet website is viewed with IE8, it should automatically render in Compatibility View to make it easier on corporate IT departments to not have to worry about upgrading so quickly. Now, that's on by default, and it only applies to domain-join machines that are going to intranet sites. You can turn that on or off with group policy, and you can disable that if you wish. And the best approach to take is to write your websites, of course, for the latest standards, and also to set a meta tag with the XUA-compatible attributes set. What this will do is it will tell Internet Explorer 8 what mode to render your pages in. You can use the IE equals emulate IE 7 mode for existing and legacy sites if you want to quickly tell Internet Explorer 8 to render with essentially the compatibility view that we talked about just earlier. If you have reviewed your sites and you know they're fine with IE 8 and they're ready to use the features in IE 8, you can set the meta tag to IE equals emulate IE 8. And this will go ahead and use standards mode. And we'll actually, if there's Quirks mode documents, we'll use Quirks mode for that as well. Basically, you can use this to override the compatibility view that consumers may have set prior for your site. If you had an issue with your site in the early days of IE, maybe during the pre-release versions, and certain customers have come to your site, noticed a problem with IE 8, and set that compatibility view for your site, having this meta tag will actually override that setting, basically saying that you know the best way to render your page, and that you're actually all set now, and you can go ahead and show in IE 8 using the latest doc type, the latest standards mode within IE 8. You can read the whole chart, and again, I'll have at the end of this presentation a list of links with some detailed documentation on each of these content values and what they will do for your website. In this segment, I'll focus on the developer story of Internet Explorer 8. I'll begin with a brief overview of some new APIs that you might consider integrating, but I'll spend the majority of time focusing on the new developer tools that are part of IE8's installation. The first feature is support for HTML5's DOM Storage API. This allows your applications access to a limited amount of client-side storage for your application's needs. Second is improved support for AJAX navigation. By setting a hash at window.location, you can tell Internet Explorer to update both the back buttons and the address bars to improve the overall navigation throughout an AJAX application. This also allows you to store and share bookmarks to particular parts of an AJAX flow. Cross-domain requests and cross-document messaging are two new mutual request features that have been added that allow consenting domains to exchange requests and messages between them. Finally, Internet Explorer has added the CSS Selector API from the W3C's Web API's working group model to really allow you to access much more quickly and easily different elements from the DOM model. Information on this and much more is available on the IE8 Developer Information Index, which you can access through that shortcut or via the long. Okay, next, let's take a look at a demonstration of the developer tools that are embedded as part of each installation of Internet Explorer 8. These tools will help us to deal with HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and other issues that we may face when we're trying to diagnose and work with various web applications on the client side. Okay, so let's walk through a demo of these tools. I'm going to switch over to Internet Explorer 8 and bring up a site that we have just to demonstrate a few things that can be corrected with the developer tools. So first of all, the developer tools live on the Tools menu. And you go to Tools, Developer Tools, or more to the point, just hit F12 whenever you want them. So I'll do that now. F12 will bring them up, and you can either have them docked within Internet Explorer, as I have here, Or you can press the undock button, or unpin, and it will begin to float around. And this is actually nice if you have two monitors. You can just slide it over to the second monitor and have full access to the window for the browser on one monitor. I'm going to go ahead and dock this for now. I might undock it a little bit later. And to begin, I want to point out a couple of options that we have. First of all, under Tools, you can choose to resize what you're looking at. So if Internet Explorer, if you're running under a very high-resolution monitor like I normally do, but for recording video, I'm down at a lower resolution, you can go ahead and say resize down to some other size. So I'll pick 800 by 600 just to show you what it can do. But then I'll actually go back and let's resize to 1024 by 768. So in this case, I'll full screen the view here. We have an issue that we want to address, and in order to diagnose that, let's introduce you to a few of the tools that are down here in the toolbar. First, on the left-hand side, we see HTML, CSS, script, and profiler. We'll walk through each one of these in turn, but I want to begin by actually using the first button here, which is select element by click. And it will let me quickly go through the entire page that I have. Let me scroll up just to show you. It can choose different things. And let me click it again. And as we click through different areas, you can see it's highlighting the various things I might choose. Now I want to know why this particular area of the form is encroaching on the right-hand side. So let's click that. And what it will do is bring us right into the HTML view, right to the element that I've selected. In this case, it was a div tag called placeholder 2. And I can open it up and see various things inside of it. But I'm more interested in finding out why is it so wide and what caused it to be a bit wider than I needed to be. I can actually, within the HTML tab, I am now looking at the element that I need. I can then look over at the right-hand side, and I can click on the Layout button. This will give me a chance to really visualize the padding and the borders and the margins that are in effect at this current point. And what I want to do is drop down the size of that particular div tag. I know it should be smaller than that, so let's go ahead and make that 460 pixels. And when I do that, it automatically updates the client-side rendering of that page. So you can see now that div has slid over and now slides up to the top of the form because it's no longer encroaching on that right-hand side navigation. So the next thing I want to look at, if you scroll down a little bit more, you can see there's a title, some title text here that's in a lovely shade of pink. We don't really know why. It's not what we originally intended. It wasn't the high-level CSS that we had set up for the site. So let's find out why that is. I could click on that again, but I can also just pick the title that I see right here. We can see title is right there. And if I want to find out information about the styles that are in effect at the current point in time, I have a couple of options over here. I can click on style, which will show me really a full list of all the styles that are in effect right now. And I could try to walk through and find the issue that way. But in this particular case, I'm actually going to use the trace styles option, which allows you to look at specific properties in the CSS settings that you have, and then find out by walking the hierarchy of different styles why a particular effect is currently being used. So I'm going to open up color, and I want to find out why the color of that title text is that pink. We can find out, well, looks like the container class selector has actually taken over what we had originally set from the main selector, and it's actually using that pink color right there. So let's say I didn't want that. I can actually just uncheck it and then take a look at what the result would be. So I'm telling that particular div tag to no longer use the selector for the container for the color style. And it automatically has updated my client-side rendering of that to show that, yeah, with the main style selected of basically a black rendering, everything looks fine. And that's great. Now we've made a couple of minor changes to the client-side rendering of this page. And with a lot of other tools, you're pretty much forced to go back and make those changes one by one back to your server, the original document. In this case, I can actually save out the deltas that I've caused through using the tool locally. So I can go ahead and click on this Save HTML button. So I'll click that, and we'll save to the desktop just the changes that we've made here. What's nice about this is any changes that I make to CSS, to HTML, whatever I need, I can then save a copy of it locally and then use that as the basis for updating the server-side version of my document, whatever created this rendered page to begin with. So it's quite nice. You won't lose any changes that you've made, and it takes a lot of the guesswork out of what did I make changes to throughout this debugging session. So next, I want to work with the JavaScript that I have as part of this page and show you some of the features that are available to you for diagnosing and working with JavaScript on the client side. So if I take a look at the script tab here, I open this up, and scroll down, you can see basically all that's in there. And you can see, actually what's interesting is that this is actually color syntax highlighted as well, which is a nice little feature. But what I want to show you is that there's a console window on the right-hand side. And as I'm running the application, I can click on various things. You'll see that the console is actually showing output from various calls into console.log.warn.error, essentially the same APIs that are used in, for example, Firebug. So you can write one set of code and reuse that between the IE dev tools and other tools like Firebug. So here you can see in the console window that as I click on various things, I keep doing that, we'll see the console output is being displayed right here in the console window. So if I click on the very last image, there happens to be a problem with it. I know this. You can see that there's actually a bit of a problem. It says object expected, and there's a problem line there. We can try to figure out what's causing that. There seems to be some kind of error with our JavaScript. So I can actually, let's back up, and let's say start debugging, and we'll say, you want to refresh the page so you can debug. Great, no problem. Go ahead and do that. And I'm going to go ahead and undock this and scroll down just so we can click on this. And when I click on this, it's going to show us that, sure enough, there was a problem, and here's exactly the line of JavaScript that caused it. And it's pretty obvious what the problem is here. We can see that the other calls, the on-click events for the other images, called show pick, whereas this one is calling in to show pie, a simple typo that we can fix fairly readily. So what I can actually do is I can just run this directly over here in the console. So I'll just say show pick this, and let's say run script. And you can see back over here, when we run the page, that is fine. It's actually gone ahead and shown us that rendered properly. So we know what the problem was. We can fix that. The debugger helped us to really isolate that problem very quickly, and we could step through and make the changes that we needed to our code to correct the issue. So another thing to show is something called the script profiler that's part of the developer tools that are built in. And it turns out that there's different implementations of some JavaScript behind these images, and one of them is much more effective than the other in terms of performance. So to find this, let's go ahead and go back into our developer tools. I'll bring those back up here. And we can go over to the... Well, first of all, I'll show you the script. Let me go and show on index.htm... basically down here. Oh, sorry, up here. We have a few different calls into different methods. Show pick will call into a couple things. Get score, and get score calls get calc score 1 and calc score 2. And these have just two different implementations we can take a look at here. We're going to come back and take a look at which one of these performs better and why. So to do that, we're going to go ahead and click on Profiler and say Start Profiling. If we go back to the web page and we'll click on a variety of the images, a couple here, a couple there, and then go back to the Profiler, we'll say Stop Profiling. What this will do is, in that brief amount of time that I used and the application through and clicked on various images, it invoked a number of those JavaScript methods for me. And it's tracked the performance of those over time. We can see I basically clicked 8 times total. It called calc score 1 and 2 8 times each. But if you take a look at the times that are over here, we can see that they're markedly different. Almost, basically twice the length of time it took in calc score 1 that it did in calc score 2. So we can find out why that is in a moment. By the way, I'll point out what these things mean. Obviously, the count is how many times we invoked it, but inclusive time is the total time that that function took, including the other things that it ended up calling as child or dependent calls. Exclusive time is just the amount of time that you spent directly in that function, subtracting any other time that you spent in functions that were called from that function. So some nice ways to visualize the data as we're basically profiling our JavaScript. So you forget which is which, you can actually double-click on each of these. It'll bring you directly to the code behind the function. We can see this is the one that ran and took basically twice the amount of time as the other one. And the reason is that the for loop works from 0, and it keeps checking the scores.length at each iteration of the loop. And the second one, calc score 2, doesn't do that. Actually, on the initialization of the loop, stores the score's length in the len variable, and it checks that each time, I less than len, each time through. And that's, of course, going to save the entire... It's going to save each iteration having to check that length property and compute that. So it turns out that actually saved us quite a number of milliseconds of overall time in the performance of the application. So with that quick look at the HTML, CSS, script, and profiler options, I want to wrap up by taking a look at some of the menu options that are available at the top of the developer tools. I won't go through all of them, but do take the time to go through them as you have a moment and take a look at some of the options, because you can turn some various features on and off to help you quickly diagnose issues that you may be encountering. For example, turning off script or pop-up blockers, CSS. You can enable viewing of different reports, such as a link report, the access keys that are in your application. Also, you can turn on the outline of various things. This is very useful for, at a glance, being able to make sense of the structure of your page. So you can turn on highlighting of table cells, of div elements, various things on your page. Images as well, you can generate an image report. You can also, within the images themselves, show the dimensions, the file size, path, alt text, various things like that. You can also update your cache through these options as well, so you can read through those as well. And then tools, I showed you resize, but you also have access to a ruler, which is pretty nice. It actually lets you compute the sizes of various things on your form. And you can have a snap to an axis, snap to the elements, and you can also change the color and the scale that it's using as well. So that's pretty useful as well. And then also on the tools menu, there's a color picker as well, which lets you hover over anything on your page, and it will automatically show you the RGB and the color markup for that particular color. You can say, great, let's go ahead and take that, copy it, and then you can bring that over into your CSS settings, and then apply that color that you need exactly into a particular element or to a style. Finally, on the right here, there's validation options as well, so you can tell you can indicate that the page should be validated against a number of different sources, such as HTML validation, accessibility validation. Take the time to look at these options as well, because they will help you identify some issues if you're trying to strive for compliance. Also, on the right-hand side, there are a variety of options for the browser mode and the document mode within the developer toolbar. So you can use the browser mode to affect both the UA string and also the rendering mode that's being used by Internet Explorer. You can see IE7, 8, and compatibility view. The document mode won't affect the UA string, but it does affect the rendering mode used by IE. So between these, you can really change and work with a variety of different rendering modes to evaluate how your page will behave with a different UA string or a different rendering mode. And with that, we'll turn our attention back to the slides. Let me close down the browser. That concludes the tour of the developer tools, again, that are included for free with the installation of Internet Explorer 8. So I'll leave you with a set of resources where you can go for more information. Microsoft.com/IE, you get the latest version from there. MSDN.com/IE has articles and videos for developers, as well as some virtual PCs that you can download that will host Internet Explorer 6, 7, and or 8 on the same machine that you can use for testing purposes. You can also access the Readiness Toolkit, which has a wealth of information for developing with these new features that I've mentioned earlier, the APIs, the new features like accelerators and web slices and search providers. You can write your own code to integrate with each of those features, and the information on how to do that is all there. You can also go to the IE8 Compatibility Center, which has a lot of resources for you to look at to understand the things that you might want to look for to determine if your site is compatible in IE8, and then things that you can do to help address those compatibility issues. Finally, I recommend you take a look at the recordings from our MIX09 conference that we had earlier this year. Go to sessions.visitmix.com, and you can download, even if you didn't attend the conference, you can download everything for free, all the recordings and the source material from those sessions. And there's plenty of sessions actually on Internet Explorer 8, and then plenty of related features as well in the general web development sphere. So do check those out as well. So finally, thanks very much for your time. Thanks for listening to the screencast. Again, you can reach me at cbowen@microsoft.com and through my blog at blogs.msdn.com/cbowen. Thanks very much.